to continue some of the reflections that Kirisaro was mentioning last night, and then from some of the discussions that we've been having with the managing team. When I got back last night to our caravan, I opened this book and it just fell at a place, a sutta that the Buddha gave, a teaching that the Buddha gave, which somehow really spoke to me anyway, and spoke to some of the area of our relationship to this whole area of being patient, or having more skill with the old patterns and tendencies that arise within the heart and mind, because a lot of what one deals with in meditation is developing skill and presence, but it is developing a clearer or more conscious or more patient relationship with old karmic tendencies that come up and trip us up. So this was the passage. Bear with me while I read it. I think it's useful just to read it. Sometimes going to the old suttas, it's a bit like dry bones, because the language is not that modern, and it's not that exciting, but it requires, to get something out of it, requires that we chew on it and stay with it and penetrate a bit more deeply into its meaning. So this is a teaching that the Buddha gave, and really it's talking about what is the difference of a life lived with wisdom and one that's lived more unconsciously. How is that a different effect, a different relationship to life? The unlearned, the unenlightened being experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings. The learned, noble disciple also experiences the same pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings. However, what is the distinction or the contrast between the learned and the noble, the unlearned and unenlightened, and the enlightened and the learned? When an unlearned, unenlightened being encounters unpleasant feeling, he grieves, laments, wails, beats his chest, and is distraught and distracted therein. He experiences two kinds of feeling, both in the body and in the mind, the activity of the mind. It is as if an archer, having fired one arrow into a certain person, were then to fire a second arrow. That person would experience pain from both of the arrows. Such is the unenlightened, unlearned being. He experiences these two kinds of pain. Moreover, in experiencing an unpleasant feeling, he feels displeasure. Displeased over the unpleasant feeling, latent tendencies to aversion dependent upon that unpleasant feeling are accumulated. Confronted with unpleasant feeling, he then seeks delight in sense pleasure. Why so? Because the unlearned knows no other way out of unpleasant feeling than to seek the distraction of sense pleasure. Delighting thus, latent tendencies to greed and lust dependent on those pleasant feelings are accumulated. He doesn't know the origin, the cessation, the attraction, the limitation, and the release from those feelings as they are. Not knowing these things as they really are, then latent tendencies to delusion dependent on neutral feelings are accumulated. Experiencing pleasant feelings, he's bound to it. Experiencing unpleasant feelings, he is bound to that. And experiencing neutral feelings, he is bound to that. Thus, the unlearned is bound to birth, aging, and death, bound to suffering. However, for the learned noble disciple experiencing the same unpleasant feeling, he neither grieves, laments, wails, nor beats his chest. He is not distressed. He experiences this feeling but does not react within the mind. It is just as if the archer, having shot one arrow into a certain person, were then to shoot a second arrow, but it misses the mark. In this case, that person would experience pain only on account of the first arrow. Such is the learned noble disciple. And then it goes on saying, the opposite of what it said before, he experiences no displeasure on account of that unpleasant feeling, having not been displeased over that unpleasant feeling, latent tendencies to aversion do not arise, and then having no desire to move towards sense pleasure, and latent tendencies towards greed and lust do not arise. And knowing already how the arising, the cessation, the process of those unpleasant feelings, the latent tendencies towards delusion or confusion do not arise. Therefore, he's not bound and he's not prone to experiencing old age, sickness, death, and suffering. I'm sort of shortening the passages. Thus, monks, is the distinction, the contrast between the unlearned and the learned disciple. Okay, so what does all that mean? this ability, I think I find for myself is very useful to reflect on when there's the experience of that which is unpleasant in the heart and the mind. It's not saying that, you know, both enlightened or learned or mature practitioners, beings, and those that are not. We all experience from contact the same sometimes unpleasant or pleasant feelings, thoughts, experiences. There's that contact with the world. So sometimes when people meditate, they meditate hoping that they'll never experience pain again or never experience a difficult circumstance. There's this sort of, in a way, a naive view almost that the more I meditate, the more I have my passport out of any difficult experience or painful sensation, or from being caught in an old arising karmic pattern that's already been conditioned in from the past. Maybe a pattern of one of the common ones, a feeling of depression or despair, or a pattern of self-disparagement, or a pattern of anger. These arise from the already existing karmic momentum that's within us, or feeling an unpleasant experience from what's around us, sound or noise or conflict. That however much we meditate, we're not going to be free from having those experiences, but the relationship to them is what is useful to explore, where there can be skill, where there can be freedom. And so it's the Buddha's talking about how do we create a different relationship to what organically is going to arise in a moment of consciousness, a moment of awareness, and we might label that's unpleasant. And so when there's not the ability just to be, I mean, it's a very simple practice he's looking at, to be with a feeling, just as a feeling, just that much, unpleasant feeling, it's just this in this moment. And then we start to create a chain of reactivity. If we don't like it, then we start to layer it with aversion, more and more aversion, more and more rigidity, resistance in the heart. And so we not only have the original contact with something that's unpleasant, but there's a lot of resistance. Or we distract and move to something very pleasant, and then we find our way out of difficulty through distraction, and then in a way we become weak because we're never able to stay with something that's difficult or unpleasant or painful. We're just used to moving all the time, and one day we find we can't move. We get ill, and we're not able to just move, and that unpleasant feeling is there. And then if we have no strength, heart or mind or awareness to bear with it, then we get overwhelmed and depressed and lost and constricted. And so learning to bear with without adding on to. Well, sometimes the third form of first is aversion and then greed and seeking, and then the last one delusion, which is more subtle. Depression or old sankhara, an old pattern, old habit rises in the mind, feeling confused, feeling doubtful, feeling lost, feeling heavy, feeling disconnected from the world around us. And rather than just seeing this is an unpleasant feeling and just that much, just seeing it for that much, we start to think, why me? You know, why have I got this? Everyone else looks quite peaceful. Why am I the one that's got this kind of feeling? Or where did this come from? Trying to understand, and sometimes we can know, get a sense of some of the factors that were conditioned in, maybe early in life or from our parents or from our schooling. But the fact is that sometimes we don't really know. We just arrive in this moment, there's an unpleasant experience in the heart, an unpleasant feeling, a constriction, a heaviness, pain. And we start to say, well, maybe previous life. Maybe it's from a previous life, and then I did this, and now I'm getting the karmic retribution. And, you know, we create these, and we can go to a psychic, and they'll say, yeah, in a previous life, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we create the whole reality. You've got that pain in your shoulder because in the medieval times someone speared you, and and it gives us a feeling, yeah, I know. And maybe it's true. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Sometimes it's hard to know. But the fact is, in that moment, we've complicated what was initially, in this moment, the Buddha says, just to know feeling for what it is, unpleasant feeling. We've made it into a whole sense of self and story and reactivity. So this is the unenlightened approach to an immediate experience that arises here and now in the present. There's an immediate experience of heaviness of the heart, of constriction, dullness. And to bear with that. So the learned or the enlightened is to know it. It's not adding the first arrow, the first pain, with a second arrow, building on layers and layers upon what is actually in this moment the arising of something that's pleasant or unpleasant. This sounds simple, but it's very hard for us to do because we're very addicted to our storylines in our life, and a lot of them are based upon this, what we like and what we don't like, what we feel is pleasant to us and what is painful to us, our sufferings and our despairs and our struggles. So there's something in us that doesn't want to see feeling as just that. We want to make a big story out of it. So learning to just see that's all it is in this moment. If we start thinking about the past, where it came from, or the future, then it's more. It becomes more. But in this moment, with mindfulness, with attention, we can notice this feeling is just as it is. Can we be with it without creating more onto it? Can we be with it without having to push it away to practice this enduring, being patient with? This is really the essence of beginning to free ourselves from karmic activity that constantly leads us into this place of suffering and constriction. Because in that movement we start to notice, actually, even though here in this moment there may be something painful or difficult that we're with, that which is with it is not painful, it's spacious, it's present, it's strong, it can be strong. It can be with something that feels very shaky inside, very uncertain, very fearful, very anxious. And that which is just patiently with it, knowing it, this is a feeling, can be very, very strong. Patience can be a strength, a courage. It's not a weakness, it's something that can bear with. And sometimes this is very valuable. I was in a situation recently, during the last year, which was very difficult, a very difficult conflict that arose. part of our community, and I found myself in a situation, a very, very complicated story, but I had to make a decision, and the decision had to be quite a strong one, and it wasn't popular with all of the group, and I landed up being blamed, receiving a lot of blame. And of course, the ego, when it's blamed, you feel yourself justifying, but you don't understand, and going to all the movements around what is basically fundamentally a very unpleasant experience of being blamed. Well, some people weren't in my shoes, so they don't know why I had to do what I felt was necessary to salvage a situation. So then, I was left with, for whether it was the right action or not, hard to know sometimes, but it was the action that in that moment felt like it needed to be taken. So then, of course, there was a karma. And the karma was this residue, unhappiness, blame, and beginning to work with that, trying to solve it, and that wasn't that easy. And then just in my meditation realizing, can I just be with the feeling? Can I be with that as a feeling, the feeling of blame? It's lovely to be with praise. We get a lot of praise as well in life. And I feel like, yes, I can really, you know, inflate myself on praise. Or maybe sometimes actually praise can be uncomfortable as well. Blame is a hard one. It's this feeling of wanting to righteousness, which you don't understand. So this adding an arrow on top of an arrow, adding a pain on top of a pain, there's already a pain there. And then we add more to it, justifying strategies, stances, hardening up, aversion, distraction, confusion. And so this is the activity of unenlightenment, the activity of being lost. So for me it was very useful just to practice in this moment. There's just this feeling here. There's just this feeling, that's all it is, without the storyline. Can I be with that? Can I allow myself just to experience that? I was talking to one of the staff this morning about depression. It's a very difficult experience to be with. So when there's depression in the heart and the mind, one doesn't feel that one can actually do very much. Energy gets low, enthusiasm goes low, feels quite isolating. When I was in the monastery, I went through a very deep depression. Kilisara was talking about last night about the enthusiasm that we start practice with. We have all sorts of ideals and hopes, and at some point the will, there's a lot of willpower. We tend to begin this kind of endeavor with an enormous will. And if you meet people in monasteries, often there's a lot of enthusiasm, idealism, and will. And after a while, of course, it all collapses. The will can't take us to awakening. It has its limitations. It can do a certain amount, but at a certain point, we can't will ourselves into awakening. It's more mysterious than that. We have to begin to allow the process to happen in and of itself. We can't do it, basically. We can do something, but at a certain point, it's happening on its own. So I hadn't really understood that, and there was a strong sense of me doing it. And when the results weren't what I wanted or what I thought should be happening, then of course depression, collapse, to the point of really not being able to even get up in the morning. A big effort to just get up, just to dress, loss of meaning, loss of value. A very, very, very hard experience to be with, and when those spaces hit one. And then the first approach was to try and think positive thoughts, affirmations, looking in the mirror in the morning, you are bright, you are wonderful. or to do lots of mantras and chanting and body work and this and that, and basically wasn't really working. Of meaning. And And one day I was laying on my bed and I just realized that, you know, I can't fight my way from out of this. I just need to open to this experience and experience it just for what it is, rather than layering things on top. Just allow, trust the awareness, trust the work of awareness, which is beyond my will, beyond my control. Just allow myself to receive, to be with, to listen to this being, like a being, in the heart and the mind that feels deflated, feels lost. And interestingly enough, what arose from something positive, there was a prayer. It's a very, very simple prayer from us, which the prayer came from my Christian conditioning, from my early childhood, which I thought had, you know, gone away a long time ago. But it's just this very, very simple prayer came from the heart. And that prayer, which was just encouraging, really a softening, a surrendering, an opening, an accepting. Lord, may I receive thee, may I receive you, may I receive you under my roof, may I be humble enough, may I be open enough. In that moment, realizing I couldn't do it all. And so this just learning to be maybe with an unpleasant feeling just for what it was, I just realized I needed to accept that and not add any more. In that moment, the power of the depression over me was lost. It wasn't that it disappeared, it still had momentum, but it was a different relationship. I found a place of being able to be at peace that was stronger than the mood, than the experience. Often we don't trust this because it feels too ephemeral. We don't trust it because the state, the mind, the feeling, the thoughts, the patterns, the habits are so powerful. Have such a strong sense of me and strong sense of self, so we don't trust. The very, very simple practice again and again of just receiving and being in awareness and trusting that awareness does its own work, mindfulness does its own work. So in breaking the chain of suffering, wheel of dependent origination, the Buddha talked of two main places to break the wheel of suffering. One is the very, very beginning of just learning to be aware in presence, in mindfulness. Just learning again and again as we've been doing it, with our breath coming back to this moment, with our body, that which is here, which we can tangibly connect with. Our ability just to be present. The other place when we start to get lost is at feeling, when feeling is there, when sensation is there, when moods are there, when sankara patterns that are strong, subtle appear, that our relationship to that can break this chain of slavish suffering. Just knowing the feeling as a feeling, unpleasant is unpleasant, bearing with that, allowing it to cease. Pleasant or neutral. So this coming back today, we have the last day of our retreat, and of course mind probably already beginning to consider moving on from this kind of a space. Thinking about how we can start to take some of what we're doing in this rather contrived and specialized space into our daily life. If we feel that we have to have special conditions all the time for our meditation, then as soon as we leave here, we're going to feel like a failure or feel averse. Life's going to move into our awareness, all the demands and the speed of it all. And so rather than associating this practice of attention and mindfulness with having things still or controlling, being able to have it more fluid than that, to be able to come back to us a place of centeredness, a place of discernment, a place of presence through not only the breath and the body, but what I'd like to encourage today, through listening. This profound practice of listening is a very useful one for everyday life. Being able to listen into takes a lot of attention to really listen. In one of the Mahayana suttas, the Buddha is talking to the gang of his disciples, and big bodhisattvas, Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin. They all sort of hang out together and practice together, and it's recorded that he asks them, what's your preferred method? What is the method that really worked for you in life? And they all come up with their different methods, and then Kuan Yin, who we've been doing the mantra, Avalokiteshvara is known as the great archetype of wisdom and compassion, says, well, my method is listening, or more accurately, the way it's described is turning the sound back to the hearer. Turning the sound back to the hearer. And the Buddha says, you know, that's really a good method for this time. It's really a good method. When things are busy, when we get lost, when we're caught up, maybe you're finding it hard to find where our breath is, where our body is, and being able to connect with that who's listening, turning the sounds, hearing the sounds, not only just hearing the sounds to steady the mind, but to allow the sound to take us back to the place of the one that's listening, because the one that's listening is the one that's present. So where the one that's spacious, where the heart is stable. So it can be listening to external sounds. As Kitty Sarah said the other day, listening to the dogs barking, or the traffic, or the soldiers, or someone in the garden, whatever they're doing. Learning to just hear it as sound rather than, again, creating the whole stories. And to notice not only the sound, but who is the one listening. Who's the one listening? This approach not only is listening to external sounds, but beginning to listen more carefully to our own being. Different moods, the different voices. It's really an extension of this vichara, the receptive, an extension of the metta, the softening and the spacious. All of them are really about introducing us to the heart that's just present, that can receive. Listening to the grumpy voices, the can't take it anymore voices, the feelings of longing, excitement. So in steadying the mind with breath and body is one activity to focus, and this listening is more just being able to hear, to receive, and to notice that which is listening, that which is just present. Listening to silence. Noticing not only the activity, but even in a city, underneath all the cacophony of the voices and the sounds and the movements, in between gaps, just noticing underneath something that's richer, something that's just present. We have to take time in our lives, moments of our activity, just to hear that there's space here, there's silence here. So one useful practice practice for today as we begin to think about leaving this space and going into our daily activities, our daily life. The perception of our life can come up to us, or we can invite it. You know, well, when we, what do we do? What is our activity that we're involved with in our daily life? Maybe sitting in the office at the computer. Maybe traveling on jet aeroplanes in our business. Or maybe mothering at home. Maybe being a therapist listening to someone else. Or maybe being a student and studying. Maybe cooking in the kitchen. Different kinds of activity. And seeing if we can sense when those activities, just maybe picking one or two that we engage with in everyday life, and seeing if we can just sense what is the feeling tone there, what is the experience of it, rather than dreading that we're just going to be swept away as soon as we go into activity and into relationship. So going out, or looking forward to being swept away. We've had it, we feel so dammed up that we can't wait to get out. And time when I used to do my first retreats, my friends and I used to always have this party, massive party, and of course the next day you'd wake up and you'd think, my God, you know, just everything blown out. So to try and make this transition as we did coming into the retreat, to begin to try and make it more consciously, so rather than having such a big split between this is a special space and everything out there is where I get lost, overwhelmed, seeing if we can begin today to allow a bit more of a feeling of a bridge, inviting consciously a relationship or an activity or even a kind of state that we get into when we find ourselves and we think of ourselves all day at a computer. What is, can we feel what that feels like in this kind of a space? And this listening and this receiving and to making a relationship, how is that? What are the places where we go unconscious? And can we know that? Can we breathe with that? And maybe also some of the day, perhaps more consciously thinking, well, you know, we've had these few days together, and many people have had insights or qualities that they feel are important, that they'd like to cultivate, or become aware of imbalances in our being, places where we're very weak, where we get lost. Maybe rather than when we leave it all evaporating, maybe consciously spending some time thinking about, well, actually, what would I like to take with me? What feels like it's something very valuable? What has been important? Maybe even writing that down, making a note. Practicing today in this listening and this knowing, when a pattern emerges, when a feeling emerges, when a thought emerges, when a mood emerges, when a conviction, I can't do it, when what I've been doing these 10 few days, when these voices and opinions, views, obsessions emerge, seeing if we can actually just see it rather than a whole reality of description of myself that we put layer upon layer, seeing if we can actually notice this is just a feeling now, this is just a perception now, this is just what it is, this is just a sound now. Can we have a relationship to that experience here and now just for what it is? Can we hear a sound just as that? Can we receive and listen into a feeling tone just as that? Perception in the mind. I can't do this. Just as that much. So we hope this day may we use it well, may it be supportive for us.